You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Without Radio. Today's date is the 29th of July 2016 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Before I bring Dennis on, I just wanted to say thanks to Captain John for bringing me some of his wonderful homebrew, which I've really enjoyed when I met up with him at the Welsh Forum last weekend. And I also wanted to say hello to Sean, who listens to Truth Without Radio, and also Richard, who was there as well. Just to let people know that we do appreciate our listeners here at Radio Aryan. Okay, well, after last week, we're very sorry we weren't here last week. It was most unfortunate circumstances. I did actually say on the live stream that we were going to be unable to bring you a podcast. And unfortunately, Dennis was very ill. And this week, Messerschmitt has called in and said that he's very ill. So you've just got me and Dennis today. So, Dennis, welcome to the show once again. And how are you feeling today?
Oh, I'm feeling all right. I mean, last week I was, when I can't do a radio interview, there must be a problem, you know what I mean? So, yeah. No, everything's fine. Well, best wishes go out to Messerschmitt. And yeah, you're right about the fans down there in London. Say hello from me to them as well, because they're always needed.
Yeah, we often get people that come into the chat room saying, you know, can we donate, or how can we help out? And just by putting a nice comment somewhere, you know, that makes it all worth it. When people say that they enjoy listening to us, that you know, that's what keeps us going, is knowing that we're providing a service and that people are appreciating what we do. You know, you don't have to send us money, but I certainly did appreciate this this homebrew. It was pretty powerful and very, very nice tasting. Dennis, let's get down to business here. I hear you've been working on part 21 of Communism by the Back Door, and it's almost ready. Is that right?
Well, it's not far off ready. It's out to say, really, because I've still got to decide on the music, which is unusual because I usually get the music right straight away, but this one, it's a little bit different, this one. So, and you know, there's one or two things. I've got the information. It's just trying to present it with the most powerful impact that I can. So I'm not going to rush it, you know, but it should be out. I would imagine it'll be out sometime next week.
Well, can you give us a bit of a hint of what the subject matter is going to be in this one?
Well, many people suggested certain themes for the last one. But to be quite honest, I never actually know myself what the next part's going to be. I just throw the dice and see how it goes. And if something catches my eye, then I go for it. It's very difficult if somebody suggests something and they haven't really got my interest, I can't really give it the same. So that's the way I tend to do it. And for the final part this time, because I've more or less solved most of the problems or proved most of the points, should I say, in the documentary, I could have finished it round about part 15, 16 when I, you know, proved that the neocons were communists. But no different to the greatest story I never told. There's always a little bit more to tell. So, and it's gone stronger and stronger as it's gone on. So this week I decided to look at the traitors, because without traitors, the New World Order couldn't be at the stage it is now, and that's a simple fact. And there have been a number of traitors. So I'm gonna go through the traitors who I feel have been most influential, actually looking for the definitive traitor, because somebody's got to pick a couple up somewhere along the lines, and this is what it's all about. So if everything falls to plan, this is how it'll more or less fall in the documentary. First of all, we take a look at our friend Mr. Roosevelt, who we've proven already that he bankrupted America on behalf of the Jewish bankers and Europe as well. And we know for a fact now there's plenty of evidence that he was covertly in the war against Hitler even before Pearl Harbor. And it's the common knowledge now that if he hadn't have sent the aid and the military aid to Stalin, Soviet Union would have fallen. And if the Soviet Union would have fallen, that could have turned a whole lot around in the war, especially with the manpower that they had out there. So he's obviously one of the main contenders. And I found out the day after Germany and their Christian allies, that's Italy, Hungary, Romania, Finland and Croatia, launched a preemptive strike against the Soviet Union invasion of Europe, the US Interior Secretary, Harold Ickes, on June 23rd, 1941, wrote in a memo to our friend Roosevelt, There will never be so good a time to stop the shipment of oil to Japan as we now have. There might develop from embargoing of oil such a situation as would make it not only possible but easy to get into this war in an effective way. And if we should thus indirectly be brought in, we would avoid the criticism that we had gone in as an ally of communistic Russia.
So this is to do with the Japanese oil embargo, was it, to bring Japanese in the war?
Roosevelt was looking for a way to get in the war. Common knowledge that nobody in America wanted to get involved only 20 years after World War I in another European civil war. And so he's looking at all angles to try and get in, and Churchill's pushing as well, and even Stalin's pushing because he's taking a battering. And so they look at Japan. Japan's at war with China. America's supplying Japan with oil. If we cut the oil, Japan will grind to a halt and couldn't even continue the war with China. So in the first documentary, I actually wrote that Roosevelt said to the Japanese he would only continue with the oil if Japan, you know, decided, you know, to end the war with China. Which he knew Japanese never do, honourable people, and they don't take that, you know, that kind of blackmail. So he knew exactly what he was doing. So, and this is just a memo from his guy, the Interior Secretary, Harold Ickes, saying, you know, it's a great idea. If we stop the oil, we can get in the war. Obviously, they were letting the, you know, Japan attack Pearl Harbor. And, There's the way in, we out people, because many people did wonder why America sided with communism, you know, until the internet today, we all now know. But yeah, that's one little memo which turned up on the doorstep.
Well, I was just been reading a little bit about Roosevelt myself. I bought the Nuremberg Trials, a book by David Irving. I've only just started reading it, but I was surprised to see that Roosevelt had actually devised a machine for mass sterilization of Germans. Not individual, yes. Germans, but mass sterilization of Germans, some kind of a machine. You imagine how painful that would have been.
I don't know. Yeah, well, I think Germany Shall Perish? I think that mentioned sterilization, didn't it?
Well, this is to do with the Morgenthau plan. I mean, the finance director was trying to get him to agree to this Morgenthau plan, and then he died before he could really sort of finalize it. But he was quite behind it.
And well, he signed the Morgenthau plan.
Yeah,
with Churchill.
Well, Churchill was behind it as well. But I mean, this idea, yeah, of just using Germans as slave labor and mass sterilizing them as well. And there was this plan to totally strip the Ruhr and the Saar of all the industry, all the heavy industry, and ship that overseas and knock Germany back to the Stone Age, basically, and just have that whole area as a pastoral living area, so that people could only live agriculturally or off whatever it is that they could do there, but with no industry. And it just made me think that this was a punishment of the German people. And people were saying, well, this is far too barbaric. You can't do this to the German people. But of course, that's exactly what Obama's done in America. That's exactly what's been done to America in the last 20 years. All the industry's been shipped off overseas. And the Americans weren't told that this was a punishment of America. But that's what this was of Germany.
As is this country, by the way.
Yeah, this is what's going on. They're shipping all the industry off to the third world, whereas only 70 years ago, that was seen as, you know, the worst punishment that could actually be done to a country. And
yeah, well, I mean, yeah, killing the middle class, this is what they're doing by getting rid of the mines and the steelworks and all that. They will kill that middle class eventually, and we will be a third world country. But I've got to, I've come to some conclusions about what you're talking about, because obviously, you'll find out as we go into this a little bit later on, part 21. I've come to the conclusion that, it has nothing at all what to do with National Socialism or Hitler or the Nazis. It has got nothing to do with that at all, because this plan was going ahead after World War One. World War One, the Versailles Treaty, was meant to kill over 20 million Germans, if not completely kill Germany off completely. That's even before the rise of nationalism. That plan was in force because our friend Richard Kuddenhove Kalergi devised this race-mixing plot to dumb down the Europe and the white races, mix it up and dumb down the education and have the elite and the Jews ruling over them. Now, this was going on even before Hitler was probably even heard of. So, consequently, whatever happened to the Germans after World War II, it didn't matter that they were Nazis, and that's just an excuse for them. They were going to do it to all Germans, and crux of it all.
Wasn't that to do with Germany becoming a financial power, and they didn't want Germany to be competition for the British Empire?
Because,
and the American Empire.
That might have been pre-World War One, but after World War One, they wanted to wipe Germany out. They only become a financial power when Hitler came into power. But before then, Germany was bankrupt and wasted and starving and everything else you can mention. They wanted Germany to die, and they wanted the Germans to die, because this Kuddenhoven Kalergi plan was already going into action, and it only stopped when nationalism rose, when the likes of Franco, the likes of Hitler, and the likes of Mussolini, it went then into the back burner. But after World War II finished, Truman in America picked up the baton. He heard one of the speeches of Kalergi, shall we call him, and liked what he heard and put it into action. And so after the World War II, this plan, which we see what Merkel's doing a wonderful job at, race mixing Europe, that was going on from the start of the century. I mean, you think about it. France were pushing the black colonist soldiers into Germany to try and mix them with the white girls even then. Because when it went to power, it stopped it all.
Yeah, there's a lot been written about that, and what an insult to the national pride this was to have all these blacks there in that district that the French had brought in there. And there was intermixing between them. So you think you think that was part of the Kuddenhove Kalergi plan?
Without a doubt, because, like I said, as we go into this patch 21, there'll be things that will come, you know, to light, which backs all this up, totally.
Now, what happened to Kuddenhove Kalergi during the war then, during the Second World War? I mean, I don't really know much about his life. I mean, I know about...
This is true. I mean, I had to do some digging, and actually Hitler was well aware of him. He said at one point, let me just try and find this here now. He said at one point, he called him a race-mixing bastard. Hitler called him that, yeah.
Well done.
Okay,
he had his measure.
I found this bit now. It says, Germany's National Socialist Government considered the Pan-European Union to be under the control of the Freemasonry. Now, this, again, brings us to why the Nationalists destroyed it. Mussolini, Franco, Hitler. So in a 1938 book, the German's not brilliant, but bear with me, Die Free Moral Weltanschauung Organisation und Politik, which is probably the worst German you've probably heard. We need Messerschmitt here for this one. But it was released in German, and it revealed that Kuddenhove Kalergi was a member of the Freemasons. Okay? So, a Masonic newspaper called The Beacon then enthused about the thoughts of the higher degree Freemason, Kuddenhove Kalergi, stating, Brother Kuddenhove Kalergi's program is a Masonic work of the highest order, and to be able to work on it together is a lofty task for all brother Freemasons. Okay, so now this is a Freemason well, let's put it this way, the Freemasons have given that job the nod. The dumbing down of Europe, the race mixing, and the killing of the white race. So in 1945, Harry Truman, like I said, read an article in a magazine that Kudinova posted about the integration of Europe. And his article impressed him that much, it was adopted to the United States. I think it was the CIA, actually, as official policy. So because they, obviously, they invented the EU and they invented the United Nations. So they picked up on this. Anyway, this Kudinov-Kalergis pan-Europeanism earned vivid loathing from Adolf Hitler. Hitler's view on Kudinov was that the rootless cosmopolitan half-breed, his words, was going to repeat the historical mistakes of his ancestors who had served the House of Habsburg. Now, I haven't found out yet exactly what they did there, but obviously Hitler thought it was a mistake. And in 1928, Hitler wrote about this his political opponent, believe it or not, describing him as Altervelt's bastard and Kudinoven, as I just said in English previously. So after the annexation of Austria by the Third Reich, Kudinov, Kalergi, fled to Czechoslovakia. When they went into Czechoslovakia, he then had to flee to France. And when France fell, he then had to flee to America. So Hitler knew all about him. And this has been going on. This guy's been, he wrote that book in 1920. This brings me to this, you know, this fact that this plan was going ahead even before the Nazis came to power. So it says, let's have a look. Oh, yeah. So we now know that it's to get this award, it's for exceptional contributions for advancing the cause of the destruction of the white race. There's no doubt about it. And there's key traces, which I'll talk about a little bit later on. We'll backtrack a little bit. But do you understand what I'm saying? That this plan has been going on since the end of World War One.
Well, yeah, he put it into words, didn't he? And this idea of...
trying to hide it as well, haven't they? Europe that book's altogether. Never been fully translated.
No. But we've got that quote. It was his idea to put all the European nations together, all underneath one big super state. And the idea was to mongrelize the people and have them ruled over by a Jewish aristocracy. But I mean, that's right. I think that's basically what's been done to all the world empires throughout history. It's just this is the time that we've actually got people at the top there admitting it. And also the Masons admitting it. And of course, the Masons would have gone along with this. And that award, I mean, as you say, the award is for services rendered to wiping out the white race, but they don't put it as that, do they? They put it as the award for serving the EU or furthering the causes of the EU.
Exactly.
But that's what's at the root of the EU.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. So, like I said, we're looking for this definitive traitor. So, you know, there's one or two on that list, like Blair and obviously Merkel and even Clinton has won that award. These are all communists and, you know, politicians with ambitions who work for the Rothschilds.
Just in many photos with Clinton's won
Clinton
that, actually.
And Blair.
So Hillary Clinton has actually won the Kudinov-Kalergi
award. No, Bill.
Bill Clinton has won the award.
Bill Clinton has won that award as well. So the plot thickens.
Well, hang on, then. So people actually outside of the European Union are also given this award for furthering the causes of it.
Yeah, I haven't got the list in front of me now, but I'll pick it up for you. I mean, even the EU itself, the EU has been awarded it. So, you know, I mean, and they have all these signs all around Brussels and what have you, Kudinov, but nobody knows who he really is. But they know who he is, and obviously me and you know who he is. It's all been kept under wraps. So,
you know what we need to do? We need to get Messerschmitt to translate that book for us. Practicalism, idealism, whatever it is.
Indeed, you might find out some interesting quotes in there. I mean, we know already, some of them know it.
Yeah. But that would be a good thing to do because there isn't an English translation of it, is there? Not that I'm aware of.
Correct. Yeah, you're spot on there.
You should give him that as homework to do while he's getting better.
I'm quite sure he's a man to do it. But so yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm convinced, you know, that this has been going on since end of World War One, minimum. And I'm also convinced that all the heads of government in our country have known about it. Well, that's another story. We'll come back to that one. So we'll look at some more traitors. And there's two, obviously, which really annoy me. There's a piece what I found on Jim Mars and Alex Jones. Now, you know, I've got E. Michael Jones talking about the neocons in an episode where he eloquently takes them apart, tells us all that they were Jews in 1920 and all Jews were communists. And when Bush was kicked out of by Carter, out of the CIA and left in the wilderness, it was the neocons who helped get Bush Sr. back into power. And these are communists, Trotskyites, which is explained fully in the documentary. And lo and behold, I switch on the computer and I find Jim Mars and Alex Jones in conversation. And Jim Mars, this is the easiest of all the deceitful tricks. This is the easiest one because most people who don't know really a lot about the ins and outs of communism and National Socialism will take socialism as straight. Socialism is socialism. Even the likes of Bill Cooper, people like that, fell for that trick. And Jim Mars, who knows better, and I'm sure Alex Jones knows better, but when Jim Mars is saying to Alex Jones that the neocons used to be communists, socialists, but then they changed to become National Socialists, and then, you know, we're a bit of a snigger, just a different type of socialist, you know, I've got to bring him to task. I really
do.
Do you mean
Tex Mars? Is it
no,
Tex
no.
Mars? Jim Mars.
Tex Mars is fine. I mean, I've studied his work and he's fine. It's Jim Mars.
Right.
He got paid something like £400,000 for being $400,000 for being a so-called expert on the JFK film, you know, with Oliver Stone.
Yeah, yeah.
Kevin Costner. So, I mean, he made a mint on that. That was due funded as well. So he is working with them. And when he's coming out with a statement like that, my blood really boils. It really does. Because I can put up with a lot of things he says. But that one, when E. Michael Jones has clinically proven, and it's the definitive thing to all what's going on, because that proves that America is under communism. When George Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney, they're all Trotskyites. That's the crux of the problem. And they're trying to deflect and they're trying to cover up, but they're using National Socialism as that deflector. And, you know, they're going to feel my wrath with it. They really are because, you know, it's out and out lying. Well, they are traitors.
Well, this is a common problem that we run into, I think, Dennis. I mean, people have been talking about this very subject in the chat room this week, about people confusing socialism, communism, with National Socialism and thinking that it's the same thing. Socialism can never work because it's international. When you're looking at all human beings the same, socialism can never work. You'll always end up with an elite at the top. But if you have national socialism and it's based on an ethnic nation, then that will work. The same that as a family works. When you're a child, you don't really think that much about your family. You rebel a little bit. But then when you get a little bit older, you look after your parents because you have a natural desire to look after your parents, and your parents had a natural desire to look after you when you were a child. And if people were educated that their nation was just their extended family, and they were taught about the things that we have in common with each other, and they were taught about all the things they don't have in common with the rest of the world and the other races, and how totally different they are from us, then you would get that same feeling among the nation and among the people, and then socialism would work because people would naturally want to be doing the best that they could for the people in their nation, and the people with more money would be happy to be donating towards helping those at the bottom learn better skills or providing jobs for them, work for them. They'd be happy to do that. And that's what National Socialism was. It was giving people what they needed in order to pull themselves up. Instead of instead of holding out an empty hand and saying, gimme, 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 you know, they were actually grabbed hold of by that hand and pulled up to the same level work and provide for their people instead of just expecting benefits, put the wages up.
You saw,
so people can pay. You know, put the wages up so people can afford to pay for a wife and four or five children. Yeah. That's the way things used to be. Not like it is today. Women are supposed to be working as well as men. Oh, but who's going to look after the children? Oh, we'll either bring them into work as well, or else we'll have to pay for the state to look after them. It's ridiculous looking at everybody as the same, but you've got to look at the natural differences between us and really highlight those differences so that the people within the nation want to look out for the others within the nation. Do you see what I mean?
Well, yeah, well, funny enough, Obama touched on that as well, saying we were all equal. And I looked at him, you know, during the Democrat convention this week, and I looked at him a bit gone out of that statement, because no, there's no way people can be equal. It just isn't, you know, there's no way that, you know, nature can provide such a platform that everybody's equal. It's impossible. You know, some things are good at one thing, some people are good at other things, some people are not good at anything, but we're not all equal. It's simple as. Like I said, you know, this, if you can remember when you saw the speech on the promo to the Communism by the Back Door, Hitler's, you didn't realise it was Hitler actually talking. I left that until the very last minute. And he talks about Marxism and the evilness of it, you know, in his speech when he was up for treason in court fighting for his life. And I'm quite sure he's not an idiot, Alex Jones. I'm convinced, you know. I mean, nobody can be that clued up but that much of an idiot. And same with Jim Mars, you know what I mean? Jim Mars gets his books in the New York Times, you know, he's well looked after, you know, people, you know, Jews love him and he tells the right story. But he's a chill and he's a gatekeeper and he's a traitor.
Well, they must, you know, they know that they're lying. They know what the truth is. Alex Jones has had David Duke on there, giving him 3 hours worth of the truth. And Alex Jones even then went and proved David Duke's point by saying, well, I've got a Jewish producer here who disagrees with you. Pulls back the camera and there's the Jew hiding behind the curtain. Exactly. It's the same as that propaganda picture.
Yeah, well, funny enough, I have got a video of YouTube. I saw it on YouTube and I downloaded it immediately. It's Alex Jones talking about the Jews, and you would think it's me and you talking. It is priceless. So he does know, because he spent, I mean, the video must be 15, 20 minutes long, and he's talking, saying exactly who it is. Might even put that up for a bonus, eh?
Well, he must have seen Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told by now. He's been mentioned on his show.
Yeah, I'm not convinced he's going to talk about it, though, is he?
But he must know the truth. So he's he's deliberately lying, basically, to get the money from it, because he knows he's not going to be popular if he does speak the truth. He's waiting until enough people already know the truth before he comes out in support of it. The same as he's now, sometimes now he's publicising some of these attacks on white people and actually talking about Black Lives Matter as being an organisation that's against white people, whereas originally he was talking about Black Lives Matter as being the revolution. They were the soldiers of the revolution. They were the good guys. Now that public opinion has changed, he's changing his views because he's only saying what he thinks is going to make himself popular, I think.
He's a chameleon, isn't he? You know what I mean? Like, he's a shill and he's a gatekeeper and he's a traitor, but he's no big fish as such. But, you know, he has an important job, and that is, you know, to marshal that internet, just like the Jews. You know, many people come to me with Wikipedia links, and to be quite honest, anything on World War II or National Socialist Germany, anything like that, you know, Wikipedia is controlled by Zionists and Jews. So, you know, and it is the biggest encyclopedia on the internet, and they've got control of it. So you can't trust what they're saying. I mean, they even banned my documentary.
Well, Wikipedia, you just can't go there for anything to do with that. But because you can go there for other things, like, say, if you're looking up pharmaceuticals or medicine or biology, something like that, then it is accurate. So, again, it lulls people into a false sense of security because they think, well, this is truthful. People can adjust this as new information comes in. They don't realise that it's so biased against nationalism and against white people. But I'm not sure Alex Jones could be the top traitor, really.
No, he's an important part, though.
He does help to sort of wake people up to the fact that there is a conspiracy, and then most people do move on from that. They start investigating
five
these
years
things.
Later, yeah.
Yeah, it takes 5 years, but if he wasn't there, then there wouldn't be that gateway for people. So he is a gatekeeper, but he's also a gateway at the same time. Once you get past him,
to be fair, if he had the thing on the Bohemian Grove, and when he interviewed the guy, and the guy blew up, and it was good work. There's no doubt about it. But if he was like that falling all the time, he'd be wonderful. But unfortunately, he's not. And he's not for a reason.
Well, who else is on your traitors list then, Dennis?
Well, we know for a fact about the Jews have openly admitted that they want to, put Muslims into Europe as possible. Our darling friend Barbara Spector was found guilty of owning up to all this and saying that the Jews will be, demonized for doing it, but Europe has to change it or it won't survive. So that's nuts and bolts nailed in there. So you look at Cameron and with the Brexit, and I looked into Cameron actually, and believe it or not, there's some talk about him even going his bloodline going back to Moses. Whether it's true or not,
it's possible. His grandfather Levita wrote some treatise on the Talmud. He was a Jew, and these Jews did interbreed with these Moors. They used the Moors to invade Spain, and when they would get kicked out of Europe, they were going to stay with the Moors in Asia, and they were still getting the Moors to attack white Christians right up until this century. I mean, Smyrna. Just off Turkey there. They massacred all the Christians there. Donma Turks, they're basically Jews that have converted to Islam. But they're still Jews, but they call them Donma, a specific breed of Turk. So it's quite possible that he could have this mixed Muslim and Jew blood way back there.
Well, that's interesting because... I looked into Cameron, obviously, because, it was up to a couple of weeks ago, our leader, and was ardently trying to get us to stay in Europe. I found out that in 2007, at an audience for a party of supporters of Israel in London, he admitted, "I am a Zionist," openly.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I've heard that.
You haven't heard that.
He went over there to Israel, and he's pretty much saying, "I wish I was a full Jew," and pledging his allegiance to them, basically in front of the Knesset, the whole Jewish parliament, pledging his allegiance to them.
Yeah, and a little bit more investigations. I compare the Brexit exit when he comes out. I don't know if you can actually remember the speech. Obviously, I'm talking about all this, but there's more impact when you see the video. You've got to understand. But he comes out with the Brexit and he says something on the lines, "I love my country and I hope to be around to help it get through, whatever times." Wonderful. Prime Minister resigns, off he goes. But then I come across another video, and it's a private video, and it's one in a meeting with Muslims. And his actual words, he says, "It's no good letting people into Britain if they're all Christian, white Christian faces. We need more Muslims. We need more Muslims in government. We need more Muslims in the higher part of the army. In all the controlling authority parts of Britain, he wants more Muslims. Just like Obama does in America and just like Spector and Merkel does in Europe."
I'm fairly certain I've heard him say that he hopes to see a Muslim prime minister in his lifetime.
He possibly has done. He possibly has. I mean, he certainly welcomes the Muslim mayor.
But this is the thing with this, Dennis. I mean, you're saying these traitors, but if they've got mixed blood, are they being traitors? Because
as British,
loyalty
that's the problem.
Yeah, well, that is the problem. This is just it. If they've got mixed blood, then their loyalties are not going to be to Britain. I mean, I've always said, said this for a long time now, that... I believe that Winston Churchill was such a traitor because of his mixed blood. He's not going to have loyalty. Yeah, he's not going to have loyalty to Britain. What was Roosevelt then?
I think it was Dutch descent. I think he's one of his great grandfathers went into banking in America when they came over from Holland.
Because Churchill's got a red Indian in him somewhere.
Yeah, he has. And that's interesting as well, because I watched a program about his mother. Now, his mother was, like I say, red Indian, and she's also believed to have some Jew in her as well. She couldn't get into high society in America. The doors just were shut because she was either a Jew or it didn't really matter at that point. It was a Jew or a red Indian. Didn't want to know her. And not just her, others as well. And what they did, they came over to Britain to marry into the elites and into royalty. And she, his mother, captured Churchill's father, married him. And then, because she was then a lady, she could go back to America and the doors had to be opened.
Yeah, I'd heard that. That's typical Jew behaviour, isn't it? Is to marry into the area and aristocracy and then pollute the bloodline and also then claim to be lords and ladies. This is where we get people like Lord Janner, the Jewish paedophile, and various others that style themselves as Lord. Even if you look at the surnames they give themselves surnames like King. The Jews were able to pick and choose what surnames they wanted. That's why they've got surnames like Mountain of Gold, King, Mountain of Roses, Mountain of Silver. These names that they come up with, it really shows their materialistic mindset. But to get back to what you're saying, Dennis, this is why it's so important, the heritage of people, and this is why it's such a big thing with them to make out ethnicity means nothing at all. And your heritage doesn't mean anything, because as soon as people start looking into it, they think, "Well, why have we got these Jews in all these important positions? Because they're not British. They're not even white. Not even European.
They pretend to be British and they pretend to be American, like Roosevelt. That's why I call them a traitor. You know what I mean? Because people, the huge majority of Britain and the huge majority of America look at them two as American and British.
Right.
But all the time, they're not.
Yeah, so you can say that Obama is a traitor to America. He claims to be American, doesn't he?
He does. Yeah, he does. He says his grandparents come from. But man, he's claimed a lot of things. I mean, I've got him on record on the documentary claiming that his grandfather went into Auschwitz with American troops and freed everybody. Well, American troops never went anywhere near Auschwitz. Blatant lie.
I don't think there were any black troops that were involved in any of that either. I think they just stuck on the bases.
Well, one thing for sure, if Obama were in that war, he wouldn't be sleeping with in the same barracks as the white unit. I'll tell you for sure.
Talking of Auschwitz, the old Pope's been over there today. This anti-Pope, he really makes my blood boil.
I don't call it Pope.
Yeah, well, you're talking about traitors. What about this anti-Pope then? The things he's said, the things that he's done. Going into Auschwitz and praying that the Lord has pity on these Jews, claiming that 1 million Jews were gassed there just because they were Jews. Nothing to do with them having to go to a concentration camp because they were enemies of the country that they were in. And this is what gets me, Dennis. I mean, we put Germans in concentration camps during the war. America put Japanese in concentration camps during the war. Germany puts Jews in concentration camps during the war. And somehow it's the most terrible thing that's ever happened. And they've got to invent this gas chamber myth and claim that millions of them were killed. But before you even get to that, they make out that it's such a terrible thing that they were put in these camps purely because they were Jews. Well, no, it wasn't purely because they were Jews. It was because they were enemies of the state. That's
well,
what
Jews
happens
fought
during
for Germany,
war.
Didn't they? I mean, 150,000 fought for them. You know, I mean, it's because of the without the internet, God knows just what they'd be telling us. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, if he were putting Jews in concentration camps because they were Jews, there would have been a lot more Jews in concentration camps.
Well, yeah, well, Britain was putting Germans in concentration camps because they were Germans.
Japanese,
not made out to be a terrible crime, is it?
No, exactly. But then again, you know, to me, what went on in Germany was no different to what went on in American Britain. You know, only that Germany lost the war. So these stories have been made, as I again proved in the documentary with the letter going out to the
churches to the and the
clergy
BBC
and everybody else. Yeah, a couple of episodes back. So this documentary actually is a unique piece of work, if I may say so myself. Even I were staggered at some of the findings that I found and actually proved. You know, I mean, so, okay, fine. When you prove it as well, it's double barrel. So yeah, I mean, Churchill himself. I saw an interesting. I might use it in at some stage in maybe a bonus. But he explains Churchill and the Jews, and he didn't really have much to do with him other than social life, other than when he went to Parliament at that time, right? Because he got into Parliament and his father in debt and he were in debt. I think Michael Jones talks about this at the London Forum. And he says like that the Jews then controlled him. But he actually had a friend of, I can't remember his name now, but he was actually, I think he was the first Prime Minister of Israel. So he had real close ties with him. A couple of other people and all, but I can't remember the names. And it's fascinating because he's a weird one, as Churchill, because he'll say one thing one minute and then he'll say something completely opposite another minute. And people think, oh, he must have been drunk. But it's really crafty. It keeps people off balance and they can never tie him down. I mean, I found him lying again in a documentary when he gave the speech about upon this battle depends the survival of Christian civilization. Well, it did, but not the way he meant it. You know, I mean, when I looked into it, all the Axis leaders were all Christian. They were leading Christian countries who knew full well about the Bolsheviks into the Soviet Union to counter, you know, before Stalin could invade Europe. And Churchill was giving it, you know, oh, we're out to save Christianity. He wasn't even Christian himself. You know, what happened, as we know, is that the Germans were fighting the communists in the East, and then later on in the war, they had to then turn the backs and fight the Masonic-led countries landing at Normandy. So, you know, it was nothing to do with Christianity, but Churchill is a little bit of a deceiver, if you like, and he mentions these things, and people just think he's a bit of a bumbling fool, but he's actually quite clever. You know, he keeps everybody off target, but when you really study him, traitor, without a doubt.
Well, what he was trying to do was the destroyer of Christian civilization, certainly not not preserving it. But I think the group was called the Focus, or the Focus Group, that actually bailed him out, and that was made up of Jews. So when he got his gambling debts and he was really in debt, he would have completely disappeared from view, not being able to pay back these debts. They paid off all those debts for him. So he owed these Jews in the background. So he may not have wanted to seem as if he was having too much to do with them in public, but in That's private, right. He was doing exactly what they say, I think.
That's right. When he's voted, because obviously, you know, the documentary coming out next week, and we do this program every week, and this is my assumption of the definitive traitor is Churchill. Right? I'll tell you now. And the fact, I can back that up because, not only as he gave a speech in 1946, 1 year after the end of World War II, and, his speech went, and it's actually engraved in a plaque, 19th of September 1946, to the academic youth in Zurich, commending the exertions of the Pan-European Union, who owes so much to Count Coudenhove Kalerga.
And that's plaque. From Churchill. That's from Churchill, this plaque.
Churchill. I've got the plaque. The plaque will be in the documentary. Right, and that is a speech, what he gave in 1946. So, you know, Hitler knows about Coudenhove, Churchill knows about Coudenhove, Truman knows about Coudenhove. So it's not quite right because we didn't know about Coudenhove.
We didn't know about him until recently.
Exactly.
I'm not even sure many nationalists knew about him until the last few years. Nick Griffin brought him up in the European Union Parliament, but I don't think there was much really written about him before then.
Well, I think you might remember in 2002, I think Churchill was voted Britain's greatest statesman. I think BBC had a poll, but I think he was regarded as the greatest Brit ever.
Yeah, I've heard that said.
Yeah, in 1956, who won that Coudenhove and Kalerga Award?
Not Winston Churchill.
Winston Churchill.
Interesting.
Game over. set and match. No arguments. The guy's a traitor. And for anybody who comes up to you and says, Churchill was this and Churchill was that, he was a traitor.
Well, it was more than that. He destroyed the British Empire. We had an empire that the sun would never set on the British Empire. And he destroyed it. Completely destroyed it.
Yeah, probably intentionally.
In the most destructive war, brothers' war, that has ever been known to history.
Yeah. Well, he won that award in 1956. He was still alive then.
Well, they're still saying today, try to make out today that he's such a wonderful statesman. He was a drunkard and he used to wear women's underwear. He's some kind of transsexual. His mother his mother used to sleep around various different men. She had a snake tattooed on her arm. She was part of some occult sort of club that she was involved in. Something to do with Freemasonry.
Well, Freemasonry is key to this as well, because he was a Freemason, and Roosevelt's a Freemason, and Truman's a Freemason, and Kudinov Kalergi's a Freemason, and who shuts Freemasonry down? Franco gives them 10 years, 20 years prison. Hitler closes them all down. Mussolini closes them all down. We know why, because they knew about all this. The reason Hitler, I believe now, the reason Hitler paid wives in Germany to stay at home to have four kids, because he knew of the birth rate. Not just in Germany, but in Europe, the white race, he knew, was being obliterated. Because you need to, every family needs to have at least four children to maintain this quota of keeping it going. But, you know, and he actually paid the money. And no government pays money for wives to stop at home and have babies unless there's a serious problem. And that was a serious problem. And at the end of the day, he knew about Kalergi, so did Churchill. And for all these people, I mean, it pains me to an extent because I think some of the British people, you know, are ignorant to the fact that the Jews are running the country, but at the heart of it are good-hearted people. But they've been conned, right? And whenever there's a poppy day and you get your red poppies out and you stand and listen to the bands and you may talk about what, you know, General Montgomery and all this and Churchill and all that. What ironically is Churchill wanted to wipe them very people out.
Well, it really doesn't surprise me. Something interesting to do with Churchill this week, I saw on the news they were selling paintings of his that were up for auction. And they were really pretty bland paintings, if that's the right word for them. Really nothing to them. Pictures of the pyramids, pictures on a beach, really nothing about them that really strikes your eye at all.
They made this great historian in 1,000 years, you know, people look up to and all this. They're like Caesar, we look at Caesar.
Well, yeah, people had obviously told him, you know, oh you're a good painter, or he thought he could paint, but he obviously couldn't. When you compare his paintings to Adolf Hitler's paintings, no comparison whatsoever. And yet they've been saying, oh, what a wonderful painter Winston Churchill was. I just thought it was interesting that the two of them on either side of the war, and both of them were into their paintings. Only one of them's paintings have got a real emotion to them, and they're about important subjects. And the other one is just an exercise in vanity. I mean, Hitler was hoping to do that for a career. He was painting out of a love of painting, Churchill was painting for vanity.
He survived at one point selling them, otherwise he would have starved.
Oh, yeah, it's a totally different way of looking at things. I think Churchill was one. I agree with you that he's probably the great. Well, he is the greatest traitor that we've ever had in Britain.
Definitive traitor, and I'll tell you something else. Just throw that light now on the bombings, the fire bombings of Germany, knowing his intention now.
Well, it was just carrying it out, wiping out the white race. He had no concern because he wasn't really white. If his mother was a red Indian, then that's what I'm saying. Why would he have any loyalty to white people anyway? His loyalty is not going to be to them. He's going to resent white people. He's going to resent the British people for having something that he can never have.
Now, all Mongols we come to like the next thing is that if Churchill's aware of it, that means, to me, you know, and Blair's aware of it, you know, and Thatcher's aware of it. We've been conned all the way down the line. Every single government, right, which is Ted Heath to Aaron Wilson, to all knew about this plan. They could not have not known if Churchill knew.
Well, they've always been pushing the EU, and this is why they've always been so against nationalism and against nationalist parties and against people that do want to preserve their race. They do all they can to replace us and wipe us out and prevent us from criticising what they do and pointing out the harm that they're actually doing.
Nothing to do with Nazism. I mean, that was a bad part. That came along and they ran that train, but it had nothing to do with that. They would have wiped out white Europe, whoever was in, and they were doing it from World War One with the Versailles Treaty.
Well, I would suggest that it's actually they've been doing this for thousands of years, and we're just the last white civilization that's left.
Yeah, yeah, you could be right there. Yeah, well, that's, you know, when people say, "Oh, you know, he punished the Germans because of Hitler," that's why Hitler wouldn't surrender. He knew the real reason. Just want to wipe them out anyway.
Well, it's a war of light against dark, isn't it? And it always has been.
It's always been about wiping us out.
You know, if you look at the esoteric Hitlerists, have this belief that it's this war between light and dark, and that we're in the Kali Yuga in the last age, and that Hitler was the man against time. And every so often, someone is born who has a certain bit extra about him to everybody else. And he leads the people against these forces of perversion and decay. Yeah. And Hitler was just the last man to for the forces of light to coalesce around and fight against these forces of darkness. And they're surrounding us now. That's what this invasion, this immigration invasion from outside Europe is. I mean, this is the final invasion of these mongrel men, these forces of darkness that seek to swallow up the white race, basically.
Well, like I said, as far as Churchill goes, it's game, set, and match, because there's no argument. He's won that award. If you look at his track history, like you said, he destroyed the British Empire. He firebombed all the German cities. I'm quite sure he's done more. But at the end of the day, the proof is in the pudding. That award is given for people who've pushed that agenda of destroying the white race.
Well, look at the track record of all of them that have had that award. You look at Merkel, what she's doing now.
Well, Merkel, yeah, but I mean, she was obviously significant, but, you know, we can see that with our own eyes. But Churchill, this great statesman, built up to be the greatest Briton of all time, it's all a joke.
Signed up to the Kudinov-Kalergi plan to mongrelise the whole of Europe and put the Jews in charge.
Correct. It just falls like a jigsaw, all the pieces.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that before. I knew some of the people that had won that award. I know that Herman Van Rompuy had won it, but to find out Clinton had won it and Churchill as well. Was there anybody else interesting that you found when you were looking through the list?
I think some of the royalty is it all under places like that? Some of them, I think the guy who started the EU, I think, and all, Bilderberger, sorry, I think he was one as well. I might have said it. Oh, no, it's a Jewish person.
Well, that would
if I had it handy with me, I'd be able to read them out to you. But.
Well, it's interesting that some of the royals have won it, because you do wonder why the royals haven't spoken up about this. How can Queen Elizabeth look out from Buckingham Palace and see a sea of black faces and be happy with that?
I said this about 10, 12 weeks ago, and I know now. I know why. The Zionists.
Well, a king is supposed to be nothing without his people. And who do the royals think they're going to be the king and queen of if the whole country is full of brown faces?
Well, it's again the taxes. Do they care?
I suppose that's all it boils down to now is money, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, do you think this? Well, I mean, this isn't just about money, is it? You know, I mean, Churchill wasn't about money.
This is about survival.
Churchill wasn't rewarded with money for doing this. This was just the way that he was. I think it's the same with the Jews. They don't necessarily do what they do because they're rewarded with money. It's because that's essential to their nature, that they behave like this. I think all the other races know what's essential to their nature, and they behave in that way. But we don't seem to know what's essential to our nature, and we rebel against it, and we become materialistic, and we fall for all the temptations that they place before us.
Well, Hitler spoke about it, didn't he? Mein Kampf, just said that. Hitler said, he actually said that when, and I know what people out there are listening to this now, he said that when European people, European culture, is impregnable, when they take the word of God, the family is strong, where the, you know, the husband and the wife are not divorced, not single parents, where the kids aren't on drugs. The only way that the Jews can break down that oak tree of white European culture is by infiltrating with race mixing, with drugs, feminism. We all, Marxists, we all know what they use, pornography. But if white Europe would stay strong, like Hitler said, it will be impregnable. It doesn't, you know, this is, the Jews can't match it. They just can't match it. They can't match the intelligence. They can't match the dynamics of a white race in full flow. Because without that full flow, we would never have got these great, you know, innovations that we've seen with technology, etc. But we fall, as you said, to the temptation of the Jews.
Well, this is why I'm always saying that the way to resist this is to fight it at the individual level. Refuse all the temptations that are put in front of us. Refuse to get the bank loans. Refuse to use the credit cards. Refuse to look at the pornography. Refuse to become a glutton or to become an alcoholic or to lose yourself in drugs or lose yourself in video games or Hollywood. Refuse all of that and just concentrate on improving yourself. And when people see that change, and when people see that actually that is what actually makes white people happy, is to be like that, then more people are going to join you, and more people are going to be like that, and more people are going to become nationalists if you say that what drives you is a desire to preserve your race and a love for your race, and that you're proud of your race and you're proud of your race's achievements, and you wish to contribute to them, and you wish to be an example to your race. And
the great danger is, when they bring laws out which force you then to adapt these principles. You know what I'm saying? Like Sarkozy said, if you don't freely race mix, we'll bring more laws out and force you to race mix. He openly said that in France.
Well, then we get marchers, don't we? And I don't think they want to make too many marches. I mean, we've got this Joshua Bonehill, but if they really couldn't lock too many people up, because there would be a public outcry and then it would draw attention to it. I firmly believe that if these liberals could actually hear about what had been done to Joshua Bonehill, there would be an outcry about it. So they don't want too many people for that to happen to, because it really would draw attention to the fact that there's this privileged group of people that are completely beyond criticism. And it would blow apart this idea that we have free speech in Britain. It really would.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, you don't like drawing attention to certain things because it's not in their interests. But that is the problem, because they don't even have to tell lies. They just hide it. And if they hide it, no one realises what's going on. They just follow whatever road they're taking down. Just like with World War II, how much have they hidden of that?
Well, that's why it's up to us.
Kudinov is a prime example.
Yeah, well, that's why it's up to us to make people aware of this and wake people up to these facts. Well, Dennis, this has been a fascinating program today. I'm sure the listeners are really going to enjoy that. And we've learned lots of new stuff, lots of things that I didn't learn. So do you want to let the listeners know where they can find the rest of your work before we finish?
Yeah, there's actually a new website. It's truthwillout.tv, which both DVDs will be available at eventually. But if you want to see the DVD, go to greatestorynevertold.tv. And for Communism by the Back Door, it now in its closing stages, Dennis Wise channel on YouTube. And you're always welcome. Say hello.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on once again, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday at the same time, at the same place, and hopefully we will have Messerschmitt with us next week, doing the last part of his Leon de Grel series.
to Radio Aryan.